What are we doing today? This is the House Committee on Health and Public Advocacy. Welcome to my nightmare. I'm going to open a public hearing on HJM 34. Diane.
Yes. To approve, members of the committee. HJM 34 urges Congress to introduce and pass legislation providing accessible and prompt health care to veterans in Oregon and timely payment to health care providers that participate in the TRICARE program. At your place when you first arrived, I gave you an exhibit from Representative Carlson's office. The title of the exhibit says TRICARE for Life Update. You can include that in your file. I also gave you, behind the staff member summary, a couple of copies of newspaper articles that you might be interested in taking a look at. They discuss the closure of the Salem Clinic in Salem, Oregon. Actually, not the closure of the clinic. It's that the clinic is no longer accepting TRICARE patients.
Representative Carlson. Absolutely.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I'm Janet Carlson, State Representative from House District 32, and with me today is Bob Newton, who will introduce himself to you later, and Warren Brown. Larry Brown, whose picture is in the newspaper article that you got in your packet, is out of town and he can't be with us today, but his son is here to represent his interests. This is an issue that I learned about actually by reading the Statesman Journal, and there was a similar article in the Kaiser Times about what was going on with medical services for our veterans. As I'm sure you're well aware, our veterans have sacrificed a great deal for our country, and part of that promise in return was that they would receive medical care. There's a system that's being put in place right now called TRICARE, which is supposed to help veterans receive medical care. However, it's my understanding from people that I've spoken to and from this newspaper article that there's a lot of paperwork that's involved with TRICARE, and that the reimbursement process has been less than speedy. And so some of our clinics have decided that it's just not worth their while to provide services through TRICARE. So what this means for Salem Kaiser is essentially that the veterans are going to have to find medical care elsewhere, perhaps Portland, the VA hospital, and travel great distances to get the medical care that they need. It was kind of interesting. I got this phone message today, too, and I haven't talked to this person, but he says he's a Vietnam veteran, and he called the VA to make an appointment for a physical and was told it was 8 months until he could get in. So as you can see, going to the VA hospital if the Salem Clinic doesn't take people is not necessarily going to be a great option either. So with that, I will turn it over to a veteran and a veteran's son to talk to you about their experiences with TRICARE.
Okay. Thank you, Chair Cruz, for and committee members for sponsoring this legislation or this bill. I urge you to pass it. My name is James Robert Newton, and I'm known more, and I live in Kaiser, Oregon, Marion County, and I most recently served as the mayor of Kaiser up until January of this year. My military experience was 37 years with the Oregon Army National Guard. And and as you may know, the reserve components are not entitled to health care until they reach age 60. And so I've only been experiencing this for a couple of years. However, my wife and I have found as we've, fortunately, we're enjoying quite good health, so we have very few bills to submit. But in my final years as a colonel in the National Guard, while I was writing regulations, and my wife, her experience has been 40 years as a secretary, and so we're both accustomed to paperwork. However, this has become a bit of overwhelming even to us, and I think I can speak for more than just the Salem area, because just this morning I spoke with a retired Brigadier General friend of mine up in the Oregon City area who is experiencing the same thing, same difficulties. So I don't believe the reason I urge you passage of this is that it is not a money thing, in my opinion. It is a matter of of people who have written regulations that are not user-friendly, they're not friendly for the health care provider, and they're not friendly for the end user. So neither party is very happy with the present situation. Now, we have, in my own case, like I said, we've had very little need for this. We both carried, my wife and I both carried health care insurance from our civilian employment into retirement, and we've maintained that. And so all we're looking to TRICARE for is that additional, our health care providers are Kaiser and Blue Cross, and they're taking care of most of the claim, but it's that additional stuff. So it doesn't amount to a lot of money, but there is a deductible there, and we're even having the challenge just to get this recognized so that we can satisfy the deductible in the event something bad does happen to us. So I think what you'll find, or that Congress will find, if this is successful as they begin to look into it, is that we have some unfriendly authors of regulations, and then you have some very dedicated public servants that are administering this program, but sometimes they become a bit overzealous in how they enforce and interpret their own little administrative rules. And furthermore, then the TRICARE, as you probably know, also subcontracts some of this. And I'll just give you, I know you're very busy and got a big agenda, and so I will tell you one example is that the last one was returned because we did not put in the street address of the Salem Clinic. And in looking it over, you'll find the Salem Clinic only gives you a post office box number. And in fact, as you look at the claim form, it does not require the street address. They just want an address. So somebody's overly aggressive interpretation there has caused the problem. And what we have found is that will, now you'll respond to that problem, and then you resubmit the paperwork, and 3 or 4 weeks later, another and the bill will come back for some other reason. And so we've got, so now that we're saying is, and we look them over every time to see if we can prevent anything like that from happening and try to make sure we've complied with all of the rules. But in this one case, the Foundation Health Federal Services Incorporated has subcontracted with the Wisconsin's Physicians Service. So not only and developing the response to our claim. And so what you'll find is that it's not just TRICARE and the federal bureaucracy, but they have contracted out to some other people, and between the two of them. So I will tell you that I don't blame Salem Clinic one iota for not doing, for discontinuing this. It is a big administrative fiasco. And the people, the claimants, are just as fed up with it as the Salem Clinic and the other providers. And I think it needs, and I would even volunteer, if you can use my name, mm-hmm. I will go back there and rewrite the rules for them. I wrote everything except healthcare stuff, and I wish now I'd had a shot at that. So with that, I'll be here if you have any questions. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman and committee, appreciate you taking your time to consider this issue and this legislation. On behalf of my father, Larry Brown, who was featured in the Statesman Journal article, he regrets he couldn't be here, but he and my mother recently retired and they're on their retirement trip. Unlike Bob, who was able to carry over other health care insurance from his previous employer, many, many veterans count on TRICARE as their primary care provider in their retirement years, and that's the situation my parents are in. And the same exact same situation Bob discussed, the forms are returned over and over and over, denied payment. And like Bob said, it's not a money issue. The money is there. Congress has funded it. But it's an administration and paperwork nightmare. And the administrators out at Salem Clinic have even said that they spend so much time doing paperwork, they don't even have to backfill those veterans that they're losing as patients to make more profit, because they're losing so much money just in paperwork administration. It's not the money's not there, it's you can't get to it because of the paperwork requirements. So I, once again, on behalf of my father, I thank you for taking time to consider this issue.
Any questions? Representative Grard.
Bob, first of all, as a fellow veteran, thank you for serving your country.
Thank you, sir.
And to any other veteran that may be in the audience, is this the best way to help this situation?
I think that this is not a state of Oregon issue, really. I mean, you're representing those of us that are being adversely affected by what's going on, so I appreciate your interest in it. But, yeah, I think this is this will call it to the attention. There are a lot of good people in the federal service, and I think once we point out to them that there is a problem, the thing we want to do is do not accept anything such as this is not a real problem. It is a real problem. Yeah, thank you.
Mr. Chair, Representative Garrard, as you and I both know, just putting a memorial through the state legislature is not necessarily going to mean that the federal government is going to stand on its head and turn cartwheels. However, I think that it provides us an opportunity to use this memorial, if it's approved by the legislature, to then set up meetings with our congressional delegation, with our senators, to be able then to say, look, you know, our veterans are needing action. The state legislature took notice of this. We support this action, and please move forward on it. So I would hope to use this as the introductory step as a broader set of strategies to make a difference.
Representative Morrison.
Thank you. I was going to ask a question similar to Representative Garrard, and you gave me a partial answer. The process of the resolution to Congress. I was going to ask how we track that, but I guess what you're saying is it's then up to some of us in the legislature to use that as an entree into our own delegation. But do these go to Congress itself? Is there a body, an official accepting department within the Congress that will take these and file them and distribute them?
Representative, this will go to the Senate Majority Leader, the Speaker of the House, and each member of the Oregon Congressional Delegation.
That answers my question. Good. Thank you.
Although I'm not quite sure who you'd send it to if you're sending it to the Senate Majority Leader, but since how it's 50-50. But,
on any given day, you don't know.
Join it, Representative Cromwell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm noticing in the article that's attached to the staff measure summary that you would potentially have to travel to Portland. Is that because you would be seeking care at the VA hospital and clinics, or is that because there's doctors in the Portland area that accept the TRICARE insurance?
Is not necessarily the case. It's just you will go to wherever you can find the provider that will accept TRICARE, and it may, the nearest one that has room to take additional patients probably will be in the Portland metro area.
Thank you.
If I might add, some of the people I've talked to about this issue say that those of us that have additional primary care providers already, that they believe that maybe the fastest way to get your claim satisfied is to discontinue your current and put it all to TRICARE. But as you've heard today, that's not the case. Don't do that. And what we're doing is we're erring on the side of caution, and we'll keep our current stuff until they work the bugs out of this system. But I think that we shouldn't be having to do this. The system has got a major defect in it, and it needs to be addressed. And I think if it gets congressional attention, that the health care service will address it, and we'll all be a lot happier for it in the not too distant future.
Thank you very much. William Dugan. Welcome.
Never been before anybody like this before. But
no, we're just folks.
Hope you have a little patience with me talking. I am a retired veteran and Vietnam veteran, and I did retire from the Oregon Army National Guard, and I was a recruiter.
William, can you identify yourself for the record, please?
I'm William Dugan.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. And I do agree with the colonel about what's happening with our veterans. I was in during the Vietnam time, and we had none of these problems. We had an excellent medical coverage, but now we don't. It's very, very important. And I want to give you an example of what I'm talking about, or what has been talking about. For instance, I had a bill. I do have illnesses, and so I'm only covered by TRICARE. I had a bill that was $71.50. TRICARE paid $24.88. Now, this is going to the Salem Clinic. And that's an example of what I'm talking about. That's why the Salem Clinic is not going to take us. It's because they are not paying the full amount of money, and as a result of that, they're going in the red. Another example would be, I just thought you'd like to know this. I was billed, I had services done at the Salem Hospital 11:30, the end of November, and it was paid April 17th. Now, that's an extraordinary long amount of time, I would think, to pay the pay something like that. And so, therefore, I wouldn't agree with what was said before, but I think something has to be done. Because I think that when a person joins the service, and I put a lot of people in the Oregon Army National Guard, over 550 people, and I've always stood by the by Oregon, and I always, you know, went by the benefits of the military and everything. And I still stand by that, but I do believe now I have to speak up and tell you that there is a problem. I really have to tell you that. I am experiencing it myself with my health. And I think that by you saying something, even though you would not make the final decision by saying something about it, I think that that would have an impact. And I'll tell you another reason why it would have an impact, because I believe that Oregon is a leader. I believe Oregon has shown itself to be a leader in a lot of ways. We have come across with new and innovative ideas ahead of other states. And this could be another reason to be ahead and to show our leadership. And so please take consideration of this bill. I think it's really, really important. Thank you.
Any questions? Thank you very much.
Chair Cruz and members of the committee, I would like you to know that just before committee, I received no revenue and no fiscal impact statement on this bill. So where I have on my SMS let you know that it may, but I have not received anything, we now know that there is no revenue and there is no fiscal.
We're going to close the public hearing on House Joint Memorial 34 and open a work session on House Joint Memorial 34. Representative Girard.
Mr. Chairman, I move that we move HJM 34 to the floor with a do pass recommendation. I will amend my state, my motion to reflect a recommendation
to be adopted.
Representative Girard has moved that House Joint Memorial 34 be sent to the floor and adopted. Any discussion? Representative Barnhart.
It's utterly unconscionable that our government should be treating our veterans the way we've heard about today. We should pass this memorial.
Representative Mona Sanderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My father was in World War II, and, well, and my grandparents served. But I don't want anyone to take offense to this, but I'm going to vote no. I feel that this is for a very small piece of. There are vehicles that can be attempted through our representatives to Congress, Representative Hooley, et cetera. I read in the newspapers that they did co-sponsor a bill that would have provided a $1.2 billion to the Veterans Administration for TRICARE patients. I don't feel this is an appropriate vehicle. I am not opposed to what the problems that those 1,000 people in the Salem area are having. But I take a look at the veterans that we have in Eastern Oregon. I take a look at the veterans that we have in Southern Oregon that I'm sure have the same problems in gathering access to health care. And they may even have more more problems in accessing health care than those in the Salem area. So I will be voting no.
Any other discussion? Representative Lee.
Thank you. I'll vote yes, but I have the same concern that any time a legislator picks up the phone and calls a member of the delegation, it means 10 times more than one of these memorials that I have seen tossed in wastebasket in Washington.
Any other discussion? Representative Cromwell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And maybe that's what we all should do, is pick up the phone and call in addition to this memorial. I think that it's something that at least shows that we have, that it is a statewide concern, and not just to the Salem area, because the reimbursement in the entire state is probably way lower than it should be able to attract doctors into taking patients that have TRICARE type of care. I would say that we are very blessed in the Willamette Valley anyway, from the standpoint that with the Portland VA and the centers around the Portland VA is one of the best in the country. It has been recognized by the Veterans Administration as being one of the best hospitals and medical centers in the United States and in the system. So in that respect, we're very blessed. But on the other hand, they can't do it alone, and they do need the help of private physicians that are in the communities. And I think it's important that the insurance, if they're going to carry the insurance, that it reflect that. The other thing I agree with Representative Barnhart is absolutely unconscionable that our government would be treating our veterans this way. And I think that we need to do everything that we can to make sure that our veterans are taken care of in their later years. And well. But later years or not, whenever. Thank you.
I certainly will vote yes, and I do support this, but I also question the impact that this has unless we do follow-up, personal contact, and I think we really have to do the personal follow-up.
Any other discussion? Hearing none, clerk, call the roll.
Representative Walker?
Aye.
Representative Tomei?
Aye.
Representative Cromwell?
Aye.
Representative Morsa?
Aye.
Representative Berard?
Aye.
Representative
Montanus?
No.
Representative
Lee?
Aye.
Representative Barnhart?
Aye.
Chair Cruz?
Aye. House Turn Memorial, having received the constitutionally required majority, is declared passed. Representative Carlson will carry. And I will close the work session on House Turn Memorial 34. Thank you.
Thank you for bringing it.
And I will open a public hearing on House Bill 2603. Diana.
Chair Cruz and members of the committee, House Bill 2603 is a number of things. On the short end, it contains recommendations of caring for Oregon children with autism spectrum disorder task force, and directs the State Board of Education to establish an autism spectrum development center. I'm going to stop there because we have some people in the room that can speak to this bill much more eloquently than I can. I have given you information on autism within my staff measure summary and is attached to the staff measure summary, and we have now received just before committee, -1 amendment, and I'm going to pass out.
If you notice, committee, legislative council has adopted the slogan of one of our carrier systems, and that's on-time delivery. So we'll get amendments just on time.
Well, these amendments have actually been around for a little while. I just received them.
Okay. Representative Hill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Representative Jim Hill, House District 5. Colleagues, House Bill 2603 comes as the result of the Caring for Oregon's Children with Autism Spectrum Disorder Task Force, which worked in the interim period. Colleagues, I will be the first to admit that this is a lot of things in this bill. And quite frankly, probably we won't be able to fund them. But what I would ask that you do is, when you consider this, is help move this bill down to Ways and Means, so that we can work on trying to find the funding to do something. Autism, people next to me are parents with autistic children. My sister has an autistic child. And the impact that that has on an individual is tremendous. And so I would ask that we do anything we can to encourage the right types of services. My sister used to live in Colorado, and Colorado has gotten a waiver with the Medicaid, and so every autistic child was eligible for a Medicaid card, and that then opened up the opportunities for funding for different levels of service. The Dash 1 amendments that are offered, Dave Adams, it talks about a specific type of treatment, the ABA approach. My sister uses that type of approach, that she prefers that with her own child, in terms of it in an attempt to try to raise the child's level of functioning higher. And there is disagreement in terms of whether someone thinks that's an appropriate treatment practice or not. I would suggest that it is much like going to a doctor, and a doctor suggests that he's going to perform this type of procedure, and if you decide that you don't like that type of procedure or the way he wants to treat your malady, you have the option of going other places and seeking a different opinion and trying to treat an illness any way you wish. Unfortunately, in today's schools, in terms of the parents are not offered choices. And the reason for that is because we don't fund these programs appropriately. ABA is a very intensive one-on-one approach, and hence is more expensive. And these parents have created schools and tried to meet those needs of these children. And so I would not oppose the Dash Ones to the board. I just saw them before coming to committee here, only to the extent that they not... a limit in terms of the ability of parents to choose, because I think in terms of parents need to manage the health of their children, and as we try to create a system in which to encourage better training with teachers and get better information to parents in terms of autism and its effect, that we let the parents help make that choice to the extent that we can fund it. And this is a funding issue, colleagues. And so with that, I will leave this to Therese and David to make some further comments on it, and would ask that at the end of your discussions and the deliberations today that you move it to Ways and Means.
Go ahead.
Chair and members of the House, thank you. My name is Therese Stewart, and I am the parent of a 10-year-old boy with autism. I founded and am the executive director of Child Development School of Oregon, and we do, our program is based on the principles of applied behavior analysis. I also sat on the Caring for Oregon's Children's Autism Task Force. I support this amendment and whatever many of the components of this bill. And I think the area that I'm most interested to address is that we know that applied behavior analysis has over 30 years of research demonstrating best outcomes for children with autism. And intervention providers are not knowledgeable about this, and nor are most parents. We have a severe shortage of providers who are knowledgeable in applied behavior analysis, and when parents get the diagnosis that their child has autism, they are given no clear information about what are effective interventions and what are not, and they're given erroneous information, especially about applied behavior analysis. So I think this amendment to the bill would be important to, as a crucial step toward improving services for children with autism, in that it would help to put the information out there for providers, referral sources, and parents about what is scientifically research-based information about most effective interventions for autism. One of the common objections that we hear is that applied behavior analysis is just one methodology, and it is not just one methodology. It is a set of principles, and there are many methodologies within those principles. And those of us who advocate for applied behavior analysis are not asking to force and mandate all children to have this intervention, but that it should be available and the information should be honestly and completely available to everyone. Thank you.
Chairman and representatives, my name is Dave Adams. I'm from Medford. I'm the co-founder of REACT, Research and Education for Autistic Children's Treatment. And I don't know whether you're aware or not, but in Oregon in 1988, there was around 200 children diagnosed with autism. In 1998, there was over 2,200, 900% increase. This is according to the Department of Education. And the estimates is that it's going to grow by 15% every year.
This is in Oregon.
These kids with effective intensive treatment, like we're talking about here, half of them reach normal functioning. And it's been proven. In this amendment, the Surgeon General of the United States has recommended this treatment. If you go to New Jersey, it's standard treatment. There's 35 schools in New Jersey alone that do this treatment because it's effective and it's cost effective. Imagine there's 2,500 kids. With Oregon's current treatment, over half of them are going to need lifelong care. That's about $2 to $4 million apiece. Under applied behavior analysis, done correctly with certified people, half the kids reach normal functioning by the second grade. And these facts have been proven for about 30 years. I listened to one of the veterans talk about how Oregon's a leader in many, many areas. This is one of the areas that it is sadly, sadly letting our children die.
Representative Lee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I strongly support this bill and all the work that you all are doing. I'm wondering about the amendment, whether it narrows what you're trying to do, or if you see it as a focal point, would you prefer that it just be one of the several items listed A through D, or do you want it to actually override the other guidelines?
My opinion is in terms of it needs to be one of them. I think in terms of, I understand the point of the amendment, and I think that's a reaction in terms of what has occurred in the past, in terms of that ABA has been sort of ruled out and has been discarded as an approach that's appropriate. And I think in terms of that, I would like to see it as one of the things to clearly state that it is an appropriate thing, and I think it's in terms of an approach that parents need to be involved in choosing what is, and not preclude any other methodologies that may not be based upon an ABA approach.
So it should actually be item E following C instead of replacing B, C, and D? It would seem you'd have more flexibility that way.
I'm Representative Mona Sanderson.
Thank you. There's such a great need to take care of our special education kids, and that is a program that is woefully underfunded from the federal level. They have said they were going to be funding us at 40% since whenever, 20, 30 years ago. I don't know when. I, of course, am very concerned about the fiscal impact. We don't have to worry about it. We are going to be voting on the substance. But have you talked with the Department of Education and gotten their input, or are they going to be here?
I believe they're signed up to.
Okay, great. I was just wondering a little bit about the program. Have you, how many staff per child, like for 2,500, how many staff would be needed? Is it a one-on-one? It says intensive behavior intervention. I would think that would be almost like one one-on-one or one for every two. So it's incredible.
Chairman Cruz and Representative Anderson, the outline of applied behavior analysis is 30 to 40 hours per week for it to be effective, 30 to 40 hours a week of one-to-one treatment under the supervision of a certified behavior analyst. That's the only way these outcomes have come about. Anything less than that has been proven to be, you know, basically harmful. Oregon's current treatment plan, more kids lose skills and abilities than gain. Over half the kids in Oregon's current treatment program, over half remain mentally retarded. And out of that, only about 37% reach mild to moderately delayed. In an applied behavior analysis program, there's only 10%, and this is 30 years of research. This is not me guessing. This is multiple journals. Only 10% remain mentally retarded instead of about 53% under our current treatment plan.
Just follow up one. Yeah. When you say there's 2,200 autistic children in Oregon, I'm trying to get the big picture here with the department. What portion of that is that of all of the developmentally or special ed kids? Is it like a 1% or a 3% or it's 4%? I just had someone say autistic children are 4% of all of the special ed.
May I answer your question also? There have been two major and very well done cost-benefit analyses, and it's been found that even with worst case, the research has shown that 47% of the children who receive intensive behavioral intervention achieve normal functioning. Worst case scenario, if only 30% achieve normal functioning, there is still a savings of about $1 million over a lifetime, and that's worst case scenario.
Mr. Chair, Representative Lewis Anderson, I think the key here is that any dollars that we can put in earlier in the system are going to save dollars later in the system, and with autism, there is an opportunity to raise these children to higher functioning levels. So in terms of it's getting the tools in the hands of the parents and the therapists in terms of so they can do their job. For example, my sister, she just recently moved back to it, and she's down in Corvallis. In Colorado, she was able to get, I can't remember, it's a speech box.
Communication.
Yeah, she was able to get this as part of the child had a Medicaid card and because of Colorado's. Those tools and the access to all of those devices she doesn't have here in terms of, and there's other autistic children in Corvallis, and they were like, wow, she has all these things, you know. What it comes down to is the parent's ability to get additional assistance. And so you have some parents in terms of who just don't financially have the ability to get these tools and things unless we start looking at innovative and different approaches and trying to figure out how we can access. If we can seek a waiver and get basically the Medicaid match for the dollars we're paying, that would be a benefit. We could help and get additional dollars there into the system to help these children. I think we need to try to approach any approach that we can rather than sort of a turf battle on which approach and which methodology. I think in terms of treat it as an illness and a treatable illness and a mental health disorder that it is, and I think approach it from that perspective.
I guess I would address this to you. How long a period of time would this intensive care last to be effective? 40 hours a week, one-on-one intensive care over how long a period of time?
Chairman Krause and Representative Morissette, it's the average time frame is approximately 2 years for best outcome. And that's the problem. It has to start early. It has to be an early intervention program, by the way. If it's after the recovery rates or the go down dramatically after 5 or 6 years old, very few kids. So the early intensive intervention, there's basically your mind still being formed, and whatever damage is done in your brain is it's a neurological disorder, and it can reroute, much like retraining people who have had strokes. And what they do is just get your thought patterns to move around to finally find a place in your brain that it works.
May I follow up? Well, I guess that answers that part of the question. Can parents be trained to do these, perform these intensive care jobs under the direction you said of a certified, qualified person to direct them? But are you going to have to hire a highly skilled specialist to do this, or can parents be trained to do it?
Chairman Krause and Representative Morissette, that's exactly what it is. It's when you talk about 40 hours a week of one-to-one, that's just the other part is training parents to do. It's actually 24 hours a day. For example, bedtime routine and bathing and bedtime routine. That was my job for 6 weeks. And we used a picture exchange communication system that was slowly faded. It showed him in each phase, and it slowly fades. And I was trained to do that. And actually, we've even trained parents to do that. A lot of people can be trained. The problem, and we were Teresa and I were talking about it today, is after a period of time, it's kind of what's next on how where this child is. And the program's modified daily. A lot of times daily, if the kid's not learning, that's what applied behavior analysis does. It's not a methodology. Mm-hmm. It's a way that if the child's not learning, it looks at what is happening. It's a way to find out how a child learns.
I guess what I was trying to arrive at is the cost of the system in general, and with the waiver, that would certainly help. But I'm assuming, I would hope that under the direction of a specialist, people can be trained to provide most of this therapy at home and be the ones responsible for measuring and so on.
Representative Morissette, some parents do provide, they can be trained and they do provide it, but you know, it is really exhausting having a child with autism, and you can only expect so much. They definitely would not be able to provide the 40 hours. The other point I wanted to make is that, yes, we have, 2,400 children with autism in Oregon, but I think we only have, not only, but there are about 300 in early intervention and early childhood special ed, kids under 5. So when you're talking about early intensive behavioral intervention, you're talking about that group of kids, and you know it goes up every year. But a lot of the children who are older, who have whatever they've had, they require a one-to-one aid in whatever school they're in anyway. So you know the cost, you're paying for it anyway for a lot of the kids in the public schools.
Representative Moore said, my sister has also volunteered that she'd be more than happy to bring my niece anytime and share with you the experience. I do not understand how she can do it. I mean, it is intense, and some families have multiple autistic children. And so, I mean, anything we can do to would be a benefit.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Thank you. Representative Hill, can you tell me who all was on this task force and how long it met?
Try and remember. I think we met 5 times, and Marilyn Gentz from Oregon Department of Education. I don't know what her title was, if she was the chair, but she organized it. And Stanash, actually.
Stanash?
Stanash was another parent. I think.
Send it to me. I could find that out for you, and I'll get you that information.
That's great. Okay. You know, in looking through the materials that we've gotten, and I was especially struck with the article from the Oregonian of March 9th, saying that this apparently, this bill, I'm assuming this is what he referred to, would cost billions of dollars, and it would, Portland Public Schools said it would take up more than half of the district's budget for all children with special needs. Assuming that that's the case, and this, what we're looking at is going, no?
I believe you're referring to a bill that was in the Senate. This establishes...
This is different concept?
This is establishing regional centers in terms of information, in terms of, I don't think there's a fiscal on it in training.
But there will be a fiscal, right? More far-reaching?
And that's been scaled down into in ways and means as well. These two things will meet down in ways and means and be worked out down there in terms of what can be done.
Okay, I guess that's what I was getting to, that if this is going to be a huge chunk, that probably we're not going to be able to afford this biennium. Is there part of that chunk that you would prefer that we concentrate on?
I think in terms of anything that disseminates information, in terms of even if you even scaled down, trying to get better information in the hands of parents and educators, in terms of it would be an appropriate approach, seen in terms of how we can... seek better training for teachers. And I think in terms of if there's any way that we can fund additional dollars for providing these types of services, ABA type services in terms of that are available in the community.
Okay, great. Thank you very much.
Sure.
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just curious, Mr. Adams, and I'm sorry I can't remember your name.
Therese Stewart.
Ms. Stewart, have you been able to access any services through the Oregon Commission on Children and Families?
No.
No. I'm just wondering, as I'm sitting here sort of brainstorming, if that wouldn't be an option to potentially be able to receive some type of services through them. While they're not responsible directly for education aspects, but they are responsible for some other aspects, and I would suggest that maybe you try going through them.
If I may respond, we're open to any idea that could bring money into treating autism. I've tried to get people into the same room and as Representative Hill has talked about, there's a lot of turf war going on, and one of the problems we run into, if it's recognized as best practice, like it has been in several other states and by the Surgeon General, then by law, Oregon has to fund it. So they're real careful on how they say things. So I think what we need to do is pass these bills as the best we can, and then I think that would force people to get outside the box and start looking at Title I funds. I know severely emotionally handicapped children in the state get Title I funds. It's federal dollars. There's a school down near us that I think they get $80,000 a year for kids, and it's a day treatment program. But we're going to have to do something, because in about 5 years we're going to have about 5,000 children that have autism and then haven't gotten treatment. And you want to look at a bill then for 24-hour care for these kids that have to be chained to their bed, because if they're unchained, they beat their heads or stab themselves or chew parts of their body off. And that doesn't have to happen. That's what's going to happen to a certain percentage of these kids that don't have any effective treatment, that have the current treatment, and or kids that are for example, I know a family that has a child, a three-year-old, 3 milligrams of I forgot the name of the drug. Doesn't work anymore. Now they're moved to Prozac. On a 3-year-old taking Prozac instead of getting effective treatment. So we're talking about the large picture here is these kids have incredible behaviors that cannot be managed by the current system that we have in place. One of the kids in our program had over 100 self-injurious behaviors a day. If he were in here, he would be screaming constantly, banging his head against anything and everything he could find, 100 times a day, never slept through the night. 4 years of treatment in the Oregon program. In 2 months, he was down in our in a applied behavior analysis program, ran by a PhD. In 2 months, potty trained, sleeps through the night, and was less than one self-injurious behavior a day. That's, I mean, if you want to look at the difference, that's the difference between a kid. This kid is going to be able to live in his home. He's not going to be one of the 50%, 47% that recover, but he's going to be one of the 37% that's going to be moderately delayed. He can be a functioning person in this society, not if he's beating his head and on Prozac to make him unconscious so they can feed him through a tube and change his diaper. That's about $2 to $4 million for one of those kids in a lifetime. Just one of those kids doesn't do that, and you pay for an entire treatment program for about 30 kids for four years. That's the difference in the cost. And those kids that we help are going to be taxpayers and voters.
Any other questions?
Thank you.
I just wanted to say to you, you know, every day we sit in this legislative body, and we probably hear maybe not 100, but close to 100 speeches a day by 100 different people. But when a man comes before us and shows tears and the emotion that you did today, you have my attention, and I thank you for coming today.
Representative Hill, Representative Lee brought up a good point. I'm not sure that the best thing to do is to adopt the Dash 1 to replace all those other things.
If the chair's indulging, as the process is moving along, we could work with the chair and work with to make the appropriate amendments in the Ways and Means process.
Okay, so you would be okay with just sending the clean bill down today?
Yeah.
And then doing...
Make sure that anything that comes out includes the appropriate language and the appropriate...
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Tina Kitchen.
That's why I'm glad I'm here. It's harder working with those kids.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I am Tina Kitchen. I am the medical director for the Office of Developmental Disabilities of the Mental Health and Developmental Disability Services Division. Unfortunately, I must come before you with some real concerns about this bill as the way it's written. The first concern, obviously, is the fiscal impact, which is not included in the governor's bill, in the governor's budget. But there are two sections that raise concerns with us around the policies. First is that this bill in Section 8 changes the eligibility for developmental disability services, and whereas we believe that this is very much an underserved section of the population, we serve children with autism up to a certain degree of disability, and this section will change the way eligibility is done for this population to a diagnosis only versus a level of disability, and could lay us open with some real problems with discrimination from people with other diagnoses but more significant disabilities. The second concern that we have around policy is that Section 2 small I, requests that this Autism Spectrum Developmental Center assist the Department of Human Services in establishing residential training sites. We, in looking at this as a fiscal impact, we assumed that we would be using some of the currently available group homes for children. However, we do not segregate children based upon their diagnosis, so we do not have a home that is just has children with autism in it, and have troubles with the policy of doing that sort of segregation. On top of that, taking a child's home, even though it might be a group home, and making it into a training site, especially for these children, can be very intrusive and disruptive. So we have some major concerns in those two areas. However, we are very sympathetic with these parents. I professionally know both Drew Stewart and Mr. Adams in that we deal with them. So I understand that the level of concern here and the desire to do something for the population. Thank you.
Questions? Representative Barnhart.
We heard earlier that the appropriate treatment for this disorder really is a 24-hour kind of treatment. And then I heard you say just a minute ago that taking treatment into a residence would be too intrusive. I don't know which of those statements is right, but one of them can't be if autism is to be treated appropriately. Would you comment?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Barnhart, children with very significant autism, the children do need 24-hour care frequently. What I'm talking about is using children essentially as material to train untrained staff, which would be what the training sites, which is what I would read I to require us to do, is to set up a group home with children there to train staff in how to appropriately deal with autism. And obviously that creates some problems with getting consent from the parents and other things, so.
Any other questions?
Just a follow-up. How do you train staff if they're not able to work with people with the disorder?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Barnhart, obviously, you would train staff by working with children, but to set up a group home, which is the child's home, as a training site, take students in there, rotate them through, saying, this is a child with autism and this is how you should approach it.
You got through to me. Thank you.
It's our problem.
All right. I got it.
Any other questions? Thank you, Tina. Greg McMurdo and Marilyn Gens.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For your record, my name is Greg McMurdo, and I represent the Oregon Department of Education. And with me is Marilyn Gintz, who is our Autism Spectrum Disorder Specialist, and Marilyn will be presenting some testimony.
Chair Cruz, I guess.
Yeah.
Thank you for this opportunity, and members of the committee. In listening to the parents, and I too know the parents and have worked with them, I think more about the kids, and I think of the challenging, complex, the unique, and yet satisfying opportunities I've had to work with the families and those kids. This is a spectrum disorder. There are children that are intensely involved as a result of autism spectrum. There are kids that are mildly impacted as a result of autism. And so we have a spectrum, and I think that it's important as we're addressing all of these issues that you recognize that it is a spectrum. I'm going to refer you to the Autism Task Force report. You have the executive summary of this report. If you would desire a copy of the complete report, we have copies available. I'll bring them back over this afternoon if that would be helpful. In the report, it lists the members of the task force. And I'll just make a statement that I was not a member of the task force. I was staff assigned to that task force. So I participated at their request. Overall, the Department of Education comes before you today to provide support for this bill with some concerns, and some of those concerns have already been expressed. but this bill will start the process of increased achievement and success for kids with autism spectrum disorder. We need to move forward in providing the best possible education, and that's the area that we're involved with, for kids with autism spectrum disorder. The task force, and in this bill, provides a systematic approach to the improvement of education and the improvement of home and parent services for kids with autism spectrum disorder. And it does it in a number of ways. It does it through the development of a center that looks at the best practice and research efforts, including applied behavior analysis. And applied behavior analysis is the umbrella over which many of the interventions that we provide for students fits. It's a principle of learning, and we're encouraging everyone to look at those principles of learning. But this bill provides for information for parents, for service providers. It provides for research. It provides an opportunity to look at what's best practice. It also then takes that information and provides training for all service providers involved with autism spectrum disorder. And as you've heard, for many severe kids, it doesn't stop when the clock stops and they go home from school for the day, but it's an intensive situation that's ongoing. So this bill provides the start and impetus to look at training on a broader scale, and the training is based on best practice and research information. You know, my experience with these families, I've had many calls. You know, it's summer or it's a weekend, and the child and the family are in distress. And what are they going to do? And my educational services aren't available. It's vital that we have the collaboration with the Department of Human Services and the Autism Development Center to look at the total picture of the child. And if that child needs support in their own home or needs support in a residential site, there's a mechanism in this bill to begin that process. We recognize that there's been a great increase in the number of students identified in Oregon with autism spectrum disorder. What's happened then is it's created a gap. It's created a gap between those personnel that and the supply of personnel that are trained to deal with children with autism spectrum. We're learning every day what's new and different about autism spectrum, and those numbers are not only increasing in Oregon, they're increasing nationwide and I suspect worldwide. Through this bill, there's a provision then for increasing training, providing standards for certification that impact teachers, that impact educational assistants, that impact parents, that impact residential service providers. The concerns that we have, and some of the concerns that have already been expressed, these things can't happen without adequate funding. We've already been in a system, and we currently try to provide the best possible education that we can for kids with autism spectrum with limited resources. And we can't have another mandate that provides a framework and an outline without adequate funding. We need to have, you know, there are many stages, as Representative Hill said, there are many stages in this recommendation packet and in this bill, and we need to have time and the appropriate training to implement this bill. Something else that's been mentioned is there is some danger in setting autism apart from other needs and other kids with disabilities. This is a unique disability, where oftentimes the kids have intensive needs. We support this bill with those considerations, and whatever action this committee takes, the task force worked very hard to bring appropriate information to the forefront, and they would encourage you in other legislative actions that may be looking at special ed to consider this task force recommendation. Thank you for the opportunity.
Senator Morsa, thank you. Marilyn, I really appreciate the work that you've done, and I admire the recommendation and the funding and the conclusion in order to implement the recommendations of the Autism Task Force in the relentless pursuit of success for each child with ASD. The legislature shall provide separate and sufficient funding to staff all components of the recommendation. So that is a legislative mandate in reverse, right?
could be.
It's a big wish.
Yeah, but it's a very positive statement, and I hope that we can do that. But
thank you.
Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, what is it that this bill provides that the department is unable to do now, other than dealing with the money issue? I mean, the money issue is going to be a real problem no matter what. So discounting that one, what is it that this bill does that you can't already do?
A number of things. Number one, provide the intensity of training that would be required when you're talking about, and now we're upwards of 3,000 children identified with autism spectrum in Oregon. So the intensity and the level of training can't be provided just solely by the Department of Education. The research component and the issues that were brought forth by this the group before us, in terms of we really need to be able to stay on top of effective practice and effective research. We have to find ways of then taking that information and providing that information to not just the children, but also the teams that are working with kids. And it's a complex process. These are complex kids. And so that's a portion of the need that's there.
Well, can I follow up? Aren't you already supposed to be doing those things? I mean, what am I missing? Where are the holes in my understanding? I'm assuming that you're already supposed to be providing information on best practices.
We do provide that information, and we provide training at the level that we can provide training. But as you listened before, the to provide training on applied behavior analysis, our teachers that are coming out of school programs, some have that background, others do not. And we have a service delivery system where we have autism specialists who are providing teachers and teams with information. Their caseloads are averaging between 1 in 60 and 1 in 100. They don't have the time in their schedule to provide the kind of training and intervention that's required for these intensive needs kids.
Let me follow up again, if I may. Now, how is that different than a financial problem? I mean, let me see if I can ask it a different way. You say you're seriously understaffed to handle the number of students you have. The piece that we can play in that part of it, at least, would be to provide more money so you could hire more staff, so that you would be able to get the numbers, the ratio down to the point where you'd have enough staff to actually do the work. What other than that does this bill provide for?
I think the autism spectrum is a complex problem right now. We have multitudes of information. If you look at the internet in terms of information that's available to people, there's a multitude of information, and some of it is conflicting. And so sorting through all of the information, taking that information and providing the level of training that's needed. So it's not just staff, but you have to be able to release the people who are involved with kids day to day to provide that training at a level that they are effective and can go back and make a difference for kids. That's a major emphasis behind this.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, another follow-up.
Okay.
Is there some deficiency in the department's authority to provide that training now? I'm not talking about the money. I'm talking about the authority.
Mr. Chair and Representative Barnhart, there are some things that we believe that we would need by statute in order to carry out the purposes of this bill. But Greg McMurdo from the Department of Education. But I think more importantly, that the bill has a fiscal impact of about $12 million. If that money were to be appropriated to us without the statutory framework, I think there would be some that would worry about that. In other words, what's going to guarantee that the department uses those funds for that purpose? So I think that was the reason the task force recommended a fairly complex statutory scheme, the scheme that you find in the bill.
And if I could follow additionally, I mean, you've demonstrated some of the things you don't like about the bill,
mm-hmm.
precisely because it's complicated, I think, or at least part of some of the complexities in it. I'm wondering if a much simpler bill that describe the purposes for the funding wouldn't accomplish your needs just as well? I don't know the answer to that question.
Mr. Chair and Representative Barnhart, it may indeed do that, and that's certainly something that the Ways and Means Committee could take a look at.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Chair?
Yeah.
Thank you. I'm trying to get the big picture here. Autism is 4% of the children that you're working with in special education. And so I would think there's such great needs. I wish I had the big picture in knowing what needs need to, there are other things that we should be focusing on. We need to focus on this, but I'm just trying to get a sense if we started really focusing on this 4%, is that going to take away from the services that we're providing or that we need to provide for the other 96% of the children with disabilities?
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, in some senses that may be true, but when you look at a child with autism spectrum disorder, some of the basic characteristics of autism spectrum disorder are children that can't engage with another person, and so they're really focused on themselves. And if you're looking at that early intensive intervention, what it addresses is that ability to bring that child back into focus and be able to learn in a more typical setting. And so it takes really intensive work to bring those kids here. That's different than some other kids with other disabilities. If that helps clarify, I think for many of those kids, that's where we have to start.
Another question.
Is it possible, one more then? Could we have amendments made to this that would make it so that it's really not a mandate, but it's unless you get money, which you, I know, desperately need. Are there amendments then that could be proposed to make this better? Because I'd like to see it move, but I would like to make sure that if it moves, that it can be worked.
I think, Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, I think that the task force members would be certainly open to amendments. Their primary goal is to increase the level of service, you know, that impacts kids with autism spectrum disorder, and there'd be room for amendments.
Well, that's the rest of the testimony.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Thomas.
Thank you. I just want to clarify in my own mind, having worked with children with autism, they run the whole spectrum from children that can function fairly well in a classroom, sometimes with an aid, sometimes even without, to children we've heard from today who are extreme cases who need 24-hour daycare.
Yes.
Correct. I had some problem with executive summary. That all children determined to be eligible for educational services with autism spectrum disorder should become eligible for MHDD services. Can you talk some about that? Mr. Chair, Representative, I want to say your name correctly.
Tomei.
Thank you. In the discussion that went on about those issues about being eligible, the task force members and the information we were able to gather is that there because of the service systems and how they look different, a child could be eligible under education and not eligible under mental health. And so balancing those two out, what they were trying to do is bring those two in line so that families had enough to deal with. They had the issues of dealing with autism spectrum and those daily needs, and they didn't have to spend their time dealing with issues of, are they eligible for educational services? Are they eligible for mental health? Where are my resources going to come from in terms of if I need help in the home? And so that was the issues behind that.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Connell.
Mr. Chair, thank you. I just have two very quick questions. One is, this part of the governor's children's plan, and two is are families eligible to get services through through their local Commission on Children and Families for kids that have autism?
Mr. Chair, Representative Krimmel, I believe the answer is no to both. I mean, they could possibly. I don't know the answer, but I would guess it's probably no.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, I could, if each local commission decided that they would want to put some of their, have autism or this type of program in their county, I would think that they could do that, since each local community develops its own plan on where they want that money to go. So, I mean, that would be up to each county.
Any other questions? Thank you very much. Kathy Harris.
Good afternoon, Chairman Cruz and committee members. My name is Kathy Harris, and I'm from Corvallis, which is Benton County. I'm here in to testify in support of House Bill 2603, not because it's the greatest bill in the world, but because it does offer families some benefits or potential benefits in the future. I would like to change some things if possible, if it was up to me, but for the most part, if you look at my testimony, it pretty much outlines what I think, and this is just my point of view as a citizen and a parent of a child with autism, of some of the strong points which have already been brought up. And I think that Marilyn Gens did a very good job of trying to tell you that intensive training for parents is really needed in this state. Let me tell you, because as a mother and my husband, the father, we wanted to know how to deal with autism. But could we? No. There was nobody to turn to. The autism specialist had a case of like 80. Now, if he was blind, okay, I think that would have been covered, because that caseload is 12. Now, you want to know where that money difference is and why this needs money. That's why. It's not fair. And in addition, one thing that's not on this testimony, the fact is that, in fact, all ESDs are not really funded evenly. I just learned yesterday that my child would probably get about $250 in services from ESD, who kind of supplies that autism specialist, whereas in Pendleton, that a child would receive $2,000 a year. That's not fair. I'm a taxpayer. I pay the same amount of taxes, maybe even more, because I'm in Benton County. So there's a lot of things that need to be changed. But overall, I would say this is a nice bill, only because that general fund is very important. It has to don't take it out of the education fund, because now you're pitting special ed parents against regular ed parents, and that does no good. You're just not going to get anywhere. Also, right now, assisting parent-to-parent contacts, that's not happening. We have no idea of who the other parents are, because they always bring up this confidentiality thing. But we need support. But we can't get it. We don't know who we are. Advocacy for parents, I'm not sure how that would happen, because, frankly, I think there's a conflict of interest with ODE helping with advocacy, unless they're able to contract that out, which COPE does right now. But they're underfunded, so that's another issue. Why would they want to fund advocacy for parents? Parents could advocate for themselves. They would ask for all these services, but they can't afford. So there's a natural built-in conflict of interest. Training for family members, yes, 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 yes. Everybody knows we need to train the family members, especially the ones that are willing to do it, because it's an 80 to 90-hour thing. You do it at night. You do it at 2 in the morning. Yeah, I'm always sitting there saying, oh, Calvin, what is this? You know, things like that. You turn off the light, you know, it's continual training. The child, and as a parent, I have personally spent $4,000 in training
because the state of Oregon does not supply it. And all my training, by the way, has pretty much occurred out of state in Maryland, California, and Washington State. But I pretty much have to say none of it here in Oregon State. That's pretty sad. Attempt to bring ODE and Human Services together, that's incredible. I talked to Marilyn Gimps the other day. I said, what do you do with the parent that calls you and says, how do I handle this child? He's screaming all the time at Walmart. Well, sometimes we refer him to developmental disabilities, but there's no consistency. There's no continuum of services, so they're treated so differently that by bringing them closer together, I think you're going to get more services and more consistent services. But I've made some points about the weaknesses that I feel there is some conflict of interest. I question that the superintendent of instruction would be pretty much head of everything, including the board. I don't know how that would work. I can't envision that working correctly, but it might. One never knows. And the fact there's a part in there, and I think it's I don't know which part it is, but it talks about each center, each of these regional centers would have a behavior specialist. But they don't say what kind of a behavior specialist that is. I mean, frankly, I might be able to apply for that job, and I have absolutely no credentials. And I'm sure that they would need to be like a teacher or something, but that doesn't mean that they know about ABA or behaviors or anything like that. Maybe they went to like a training seminar for a couple days. Boom, you're a behavior specialist. We really need certification in that area, and I don't know. I haven't read the amendment, but that might be a good part to ensuring that that behavior specialist has some certification, because there is a national certification for behavior analysts, but Oregon doesn't seem to acknowledge that or want to deal with it, or maybe it's too expensive. I don't know. So that's pretty much all I have. I thank you for your time and considering this bill. It's a lot of work, and I realize that autism is bizarre, but I think it's definitely worth it because some of these kids are really, really cute, and they grow up to be adults. And so we can either place them in the community, in a group home, or in prison. And I suspect some of them will be in prison. And I know with a corrections background, that's expensive. So I appreciate your time, and if you have any questions.
Representative Morissette, I really appreciate your testimony. Could you tell us a little bit more about the progress that you personally have been able to make with all of the training that you've had and how long you've been doing this therapy with your child?
Absolutely. Chairman Cruz and Representative Morissette, that's a good question, and I'll try to be brief. I've been doing this for about 2 years, and we actually have 3 therapists, and Early Intervention has now hired those 3 therapists over the past 2 months. Last year, Calvin didn't, pretty much didn't converse. You would ask him something, he wouldn't. He's 5. He just turned 5. He didn't understand that when you ask something, that something's expected back. I mean, it's a communication disorder. Today, he will do 2, 3, 4, I've even seen 6-way conversations. That's pretty amazing. I've had people tell me, this is parents with children with autism, that child is not autistic. He just started speaking about 1.5, 2 years ago, literally. And it was very obvious that what we're doing, the applied behavior analysis, we use what's called verbal behavior, is very instrumental to his progress, and there's a very good chance that your taxpayer money will not be funding an aid in the next 2 years, because we've been putting 15, 20 hours a week into him, which is not enough. That's why it's in question. If he had the 30 to 40 hours, everybody that I've gone to said that would have been that kid would have not had a diagnosis. It's amazing. Some of these kids really are higher functioning. As Representative Tomei pointed out, some of them are lower functioning. Now, I have another testimony that I won't read because I wouldn't do it justice. But that child is self-injurious. It
it kills me. I babysat him. It was really interesting to see my child next to the other child, and the other child is lower functioning, but he didn't have to be self-injurious. And I asked her, doesn't the school system help? I mean, there's ways of dealing with these. I mean, how would you like to do that all day long? I mean, it's so loud, you can hear it in the next room. This child has got to cause some brain issues, too. Well, no, they don't have a behavior specialist. And if they do, they've got a caseload of, I don't know, hundreds, gazillions probably. So, every child is different. Mine happen to have made a lot of gains. Maybe other ones won't, but they'll still not be injuring themselves. They'll be potty trained, and maybe they can have some sort of a job.
Thank you. Senator Tomei.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Kathy, your testimony has been terrific, and your written testimony is also very good. But you said you had some concern about Section 2, Sub 2E, about the current practice. You elaborate on that.
Okay. Chair Cruz and Representative Tomei, I didn't bring that up. It's a methodology issue. I apologize. And it's a really important one. Essentially, what ODE is saying, okay, and I quote, shall not require a specific educational methodology, but shall identify elements of effective practices. Essentially what that means is we're going to take a little of this and a little of that, and that's called eclecticism. That is a methodology in itself. So what they're saying is we won't specify one because we take a little of this and a little of that, and that's all we'll give you. If you want ABA, well, good luck. We not only fund it, we won't fund it, you won't get money for it, you need to go out of state for it practically. And in fact, I'm not sure, but I suspect there still is no certified ABA professional in the state of Oregon. That's pretty sad. Idaho has 2. Washington has over 9. In California, I think I lost count after like 30. Because of the way Oregon treats ABA, we have no professionals in the state, and it's going to take some legislation to turn that around.
ABA is
Applied Behavior Analysis. It's a behavioral method of teaching the child anything from not hitting yourself, my son is not sucking his thumb, to how to identify letters, how to converse, how to even potty train. Richard Fox wrote a book on it. That's a behavioral way of teaching them to body train. It's been around for like 40 years or something. It's a methodology issue. And ODE will say, and you can bring Steve Johnson in here because I know he said this at the task force, that ABA is too controversial, so let's not discuss it.
Can you follow up, Mr. Chair? So you're advocating ABA?
I am advocating ABA, yes.
Thank you, Kathy.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Wilma Wells.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I'm Wilma Wells. I represent the Confederation of Oregon School Administrators, and I'll make my testimony as brief as possible. Probably that's a little inaccurate. And I think I checked that we oppose the bill. What would be more accurate for me to say is we do not support the bill, and this is why. As has already been pointed out, of all the children in this state who are children with disabilities, 4% of them are children with autism. There are a lot of children in this state who do not happen to be identified as children with autism. In cooperation with advocates, School Boards Association, the Oregon Business Council, and the Oregon Department of Education, there has been a bill introduced. It's House Bill 2598. Which will take a look at special education and how it is provided in this state. Whether or not we're getting the best bang for the buck, and whether or not the children are getting the kind of programs that they receive. Now, in relation to this study, I was at most of those meetings. I observed the meetings. I can't fault the proposal, because what I see in this proposal is establishing a research center which would not be under the auspices of the State Department of Education, but would in fact be a contracted service with an advisory committee that would be made up of parents and professionals. And they would run that program, and they would look at not just research, but training for folks in the, who are educators, teaching assistants, and parents, and then have some corroboration with mental health. That's a good idea. It's an expensive one, but I think we could be more comfortable with it if it were in the context of what's happening with all children with disabilities. Now, I need to tell you that as an elementary principal, I supervised a program for early intervention and early childhood special education. And I've made a real effort not to be awfully emotional about my testimony, because when you talk about children with autism, it's pretty hard not to be, because those parents and the folks who work with the children, now not with all of them, but with some of them, are challenged night and day. And I'll just take a little bit of time to tell you about one of my dear friends who had a daughter who had autism. She couldn't find out what was the matter until the child was over 2 or 3 years old. The doctors told her when the child was 7, she would have to place the child at Fairview. It was still open then. When the child was 4 years old, she came to a river, a mountain she couldn't get over, because the child, you know, some of them are never quiet, and I mean never quiet. And this little child was in a crib and rattled that crib so loudly all night long that her husband could not sleep. And he finally said to her, "Hilda, you've got to choose. You either place that child in Fairview now, or you're not going to have a husband around." Now, I don't know how often that happens to families, but it happens. And it's a very, very horrible kind of thing to see. And it's a real, real burden on families. So what I want you to know is I have some sincere sympathy and understanding, not real understanding, forget I said that, of these parents. But I'm concerned that we should put our money and looking at the whole thing. Right now, we don't have enough special education teachers, let alone enough trained teaching assistants. We can't find special education teachers in this state. They're scarce all over the United States. The job is not easy. It requires additional training. So sometimes in our effort to make things better, we may make things worse. I don't believe that the research center will make things worse, but I think it may be too expensive. Now, I need to tell you how 2598 study will be funded. The superintendents coalition of this state, they're members of COSA, and they meet regularly, and they make decisions about school funding. They believe that the issue of looking at funding and providing services to children with disabilities in this state is worth taking $150,000 off the top of the state school fund, which means 7 cents a child in every district in the state, and seeing that those funds are used for a research project that will look at the whole spectrum of special education. Thank you for your time.
Yes.
Thank you. I just wanted to point out that bill that you're referring to was in the SA Squared Committee, the real name of which I can never remember, the Education Committee,
yes.
On Tuesday, and it was passed out by that committee. I voted against it in that committee precisely because it was a carve-out, because I had failed to correctly read my notes about exactly the point you just made. Representatives will find a note from me in their boxes indicating that I plan to support the bill when it gets to the floor. in spite of the fact that I voted no in committee. And I appreciate your pointing it out to us again.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Ed Hughes?
Mr. Chairman, if you have additional people on the list, they could go first.
You're the cleanup hitter, so.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, Ed Hughes, lobbyist. I'm helping the autistic parents, and I may have some answers for the committee. The committee's had excellent questions. This is a major. This has been under study for 2.5 years, and these parents are heroes, all of them. Let me tell you, I just was amazed working with these people. I really admire and respect them. You don't know what they go through. Therese Stewart, who was here testifying before you, said that she had a son that was autistic, was 10 years old. What she failed to tell you was he's also blind. But with her working with her son, she's had a great deal of success, and her son is a concert pianist. He's super bright musically, and he says, I communicate through music, and she's been around raising funds for these projects using her son as a pianist. So these people are brave, wonderful people, and they've come before you with their hearts out, and what they're saying is help. Give us some help, because there isn't much of a program here. And it needs beefing up, and it needs helping, it needs a little bit of money. Now, politically speaking, we've been talking to the co-chairs of Ways and Means, and they both nodded their head. They understand. So I think we're going to be okay there. But we need to get the bill to Ways and Means. And there's been some criticism that the bill's too complex and that the bill doesn't cover all other disabled children. You have to start somewhere. We have to get this program going and get it started, because if we do this, there's a possibility this particular program will be copied all over the nation, and then it can be copied by the other children here, Down's children and others, next legislative session and so on and so on and so on, so that eventually we can have a good program for all of these children in Oregon. We need that, but we have to start somewhere. Now, some of the criticism brought forth and questions were regarding trained people to train and help autistic children, and the fact that there aren't any people here that are trained. Well, there's no program here. That's why there are no people here. The state of Florida has many trained people, from what I understand, and we can get some of those people here. Now, we've addressed the problem of having trained people work with the autistic children by introducing the Senate bill. Senate Bill 648, under sponsorship of Senator Starr, over in the Senate. It's being heard now as we speak. I didn't plan that. It just happened. But 648 sets forth a program which will train through our colleges and universities persons who would be skilled in ABA so that they can help these autistic children. And, of course, that takes funding, too, and we're working on that. So the only thing I can say beyond this is that a lot of questions have been raised, and rightfully so, because this is a complex, complex problem. It spans actually three state agencies. It's over on the human resources side because the problem is there. It's in the Department of Education side because there are problems there. And now with Senate Bill 648 over in the Senate, it's higher education side. So we've been working with Senator Trove over on that side. I've gone around and lobbied the bill over in the Senate and find very little opposition, very little. Everybody wants to help. We had a really good hearing over on the Senate side, and these same people came forward, autistic parents. Once you hear them, then you want to help them, and that's what we need to do. The bottom line is helping these children. And you have to take the first step. This is it. Questions?
Mr. Chair. Representative Morrison. Ed, you mentioned the woman who gave testimony whose son is a pianist.
Yes.
I guess I'm aware that there are some autistic children who are very talented. What percent?
Absolutely.
Well, what percent? Because we hear the 70% and the, you know, the, we hear the other end of the spectrum. What about the upper end of the spectrum?
If it's 4% of the people, the kids are autistic, I don't know what percentage are super bright, but there's a bunch of them. I have a child that's not autistic, but he's super bright, and I've been through the mill on that. That's one of the reasons I'm helping here. We need to work with the children starting at maybe age 3 through 5 or 7 and find out where their talents are. That's one of the things we can do with the ABA program. We can get the people, the professionals, working with the children. Once we work with them, we can find where their talent is, we can develop it, and later on in life, they can be self-sustaining. And that's what we want, because that's where the savings are for all of us. Did that answer your question, Representative?
Any other questions, Representative Gerard?
There's no question the program, we need to do something. There's an old adage of how do you eat an elephant? The answer being one bite at a time.
Yes, sir. Absolutely.
And I think that's
where
what we have to do.
Yes, sir.
Any other questions?
One thing, Mr. Chairman. Hard for a lobbyist to do this, but I'd like to compliment the chair and his working with us on this bill to keep it going, and your staff. The chair and the staff on this committee are exceptional. You've done a great job. I'd like to thank you, sir, for that, and your staff, too.
Appreciate that. Thank you, Ed.
Can we
committee of standard days for a minute.